Screenwriter Paul Rudnick describes his new film, In and Out, as homophobia in the heartland. Kevin Kline plays Howard Brackett, a high school English teacher and coach in Greenleaf, Indiana. Just a week before Howard's wedding, one of his former students wins an Academy Award, and during his acceptance speech, he honors his former high school teacher and flatly states that Howard is gay. The media converge on Greenleaf and expose everyone's feelings about homosexuality. Just as Paul Rudnick's earlier film, Jeffrey, found comedy in the AIDS epidemic, this new film brings out the screwball comedy in prejudice and coming out. Rudnick also wrote the screenplay for Adam's Family Values and is the author of the plays I Hate Hamlet and The Naked Truth. Since so much of In and Out takes place in a high school, I asked Paul Rudnick if he was out in high school.
I've been pretty much out since birth, I think, because I think I must have been the most egocentric child possible, because for at least the first several years of my life, I assumed everyone was gay. I assumed everyone was like me. It just didn't occur to me to look for differences, let alone any sense of shame or not belonging. Also, I grew up in New Jersey, so rather than dividing the world into gay and straight, or even into men and women, I tended to separate everyone into people from New Jersey and people from New York. And I certainly knew which group I ultimately belonged in. So it was strange. I just never went through that particular trauma. I guess also one of the things I resent about the whole notion of coming out is that straight kids are never expected to do it. That a straight kid never has to sit his parents down and say, "Mom, Dad, I have something to tell you." You know, it's only gay kids who have this additional bar mitzvah moment.
All of this stuff that you're talking about is pretty serious stuff. Coming out and should gay teachers teach and what's masculine behavior. And maybe you're never a person who has the problem of getting too serious. But was it ever a problem for you? Did you ever feel that you were losing track of the comic tone of the film, which really is over the top?
Right. Well, I think, my God, sexuality, because it is such a serious issue, is also perfect comic material. I think comedy is at its best, at its funniest, when the stakes are the highest for the characters involved. And when you're dealing with sex and anyone's romantic future, the stakes don't get much higher than that. So it seemed a very ripe situation. In terms of how serious it is, I guess one thing that's been unfortunate, and sometimes in the way coming out has been dealt with in movies and books, even with good intentions, is that it's often treated as a scandal, a stigma, or a terrible trauma, that it's seen as a moment to be, you know, dealt with, struggled through, something to be overcome. And I think that's nonsense. I think that people's sexuality should be a source of joy, should be a reason for celebration. And so that was the angle I took, that rather than, seeing homosexuality still as some, you know, dreadful burden and outcast situation, doesn't it make more sense to treat it as you would any other facet of a romantic comedy? I wanted to see if outing and coming out could now be used in a screwball sense, the way movies like Bringing Up Baby or The Philadelphia Story, great comedies of the 30s, would use marriage or infidelity or divorce as comic engines for their story. I thought maybe the world has reached the point where coming out is now one of those very useful social and comic institutions.
It sounds as if writing a screwball comedy about coming out could be a little bit of a tightrope walk. I mean, were you worried while you were writing the screenplay about being politically correct and who you would be politically correct to? What camp?
Oh, I think when you write about coming out, you have to begin with the assumption that you can't win, that you'll be in trouble with the far left and the far right and all sorts of people in between. And that's actually part of the fun, that I think, my God, you political correctness can be the absolute death of comedy. I think it could be a real straitjacket. So I try to ignore it and be as politically irresponsible as possible, because it just, my God, the world is more complicated and far more interesting than any political dogma allows.
Well, Howard Brackett is a serious Barbara Streisand fan. He seems to have a little trouble controlling his hands. He makes elaborate hand gestures that people interpret as evidence that he's gay. You mind a lot of stereotypes, and some people have criticized that, saying that you're playing into some of the same gay stereotypes that every other man, woman, or child who's written a Hollywood film about gays has. How do you respond to that?
Well, kind of, I think, in two ways. First, I think the only thing to do with stereotypes is to mock them and have as much fun as possible. I think that's a way of demolishing them. But beyond that, there's something that actually offends me, which is, especially when people start to use the word stereotype, often what they're really looking for is a gay character who seems straight, is a gay character with absolutely no characteristics, someone who is such an idealized, perfect role model that there not only is no one gay like that, there's no one straight like that. And I think treating characters as that delicate also becomes quite a bore. Also, there's a sort of shameful rejection of anything that would be considered, effeminate in a character, anything that would seem too gay. And I think, my God, that's as offensive as any other kind of discrimination, to say that, my God, any man who seems gay, in quotes, should not be portrayed on screen or on stage. That's shameful and actually genuinely shocking to me, the idea of rejecting an entire segment of the population that way. And I understand the need for all sorts of gay characters. I think that's actually the real answer to any kind of stereotyping situation, is diversity, is to have gay characters who are rabid Streisand fans and gay characters who are Green Bay Packer fans. And often those can be the same person. But I think the answer isn't to limit characters. There's nothing easier and more palatable than saying, oh, look, here's a gay character who's just like a straight person, so don't worry about him or her. I think that's offensive.
It seems another damned if you do, damned if you don't situation.
They're
either too gay or they're not gay enough.
Right,
or too
right.
Straight.
And I think what's required is for everyone to relax a bit. And the only way that will happen is to have more gay movies, more gay TV shows, even more gay trash. I think the way that real equality doesn't mean just sort of high-toned political acceptance. It means gay romance novels, gay characters in the IKEA TV commercials, gay people on the Victoria Principal infomercials. You know, it means sort of complete equality, which means, you know, every social level, not just, on the op-ed page.
Let's talk about the kiss scene. There's a serious kiss between Tom Selleck, who plays a kind of a sleazy entertainment reporter who happens to be gay, and Howard Brackett, played by Kevin Kline. Now, you were there on the set most of the time during the filming. How did you see that scene?
Oh, yes.
How did the scene evolve? How did Kline and Selleck refine the big kiss?
Oh, they are amazing performers. And I think they realized that it wasn't even so much that it was a same-sex kiss as that it was a major Hollywood smooch. That in many ways, movie stars are dating surrogates for the rest of us. So, you know, when Gable kisses Garbo, my God, they'd better make us swoon. That's their responsibility. That's why they're getting the big bucks and the, you know, 25-foot-high movie screens. So when you've got Kevin Kline and Tom Selleck, it's Gable and Grant, maybe, but it's the same responsibility. They knew that this was a Gone with the Wind Casablanca-scale moment, and that they really needed to go for it, that they needed to make the rest of us wish, you know, we were up there. And they were just fantastic. They just hurled themselves into the moment, and it only got sexier and funnier. And I think the secret of that that scene, I watched it now with many, many audiences, with all sorts of demographics, you know, straight teenagers, older people, gay, straight men, women, you name it. And the response has been amazingly consistent. When the kiss begins, there's a gasp. There's a sense of genuine shock and maybe even horror on the part of some people. And as it continues, the audience begins to laugh uproariously. And I think, I like to think, that they're often laughing at their own fears, at a sense of, my God, what were we in such a dither about? And then as the kiss goes even longer, cheers tend to erupt. And there's a real sense of audience celebration there. And that's because the movie and the actors really go for it. I think if it were a peck on the cheek, no, nobody would be happy. But it's a real Hollywood moment. And I think that's a complete tribute to Frank Oz, the movie's director as well, who was overseeing the whole scene. And, you know, two terrific hunks.
Now, neither one of them came to you, and I'm assuming both of them are straight. I think so. I think we could say that. Did either one of them come to you and say, so Paul, how should we do this?
I think they're pretty much familiar with the way kissing works. You know, I don't think that changes so much from gender preference group to gender preference group. So they I think now I know when people have asked both Kevin and Tom Selleck about it, they've said that, you know, mouthwash and floss were involved in their preparations, but there was no other enormous leap necessary. I think, you know, a kiss is still a kiss.
Paul Rudnick is my guest. He's a novelist, playwright, and screenwriter. His new film is In and Out. We'll hear more after this break. This is Fresh Air. Paul Rudnick is my guest. He's a playwright, a novelist, and a screenwriter. He wrote the screenplay for the new movie In and Out. He's also a columnist for Premiere Magazine. You started your career in New York first as a journalist. What was your beat?
Oh, my God. I was just one of the worst. I was so irresponsible that I was sent on assignments that no one else would touch. I remember one of the first stories I covered was the auction of the Joan Crawford estate, where it among the items available were Joan Crawford's styrofoam Pepsi cooler, her waste baskets, and my favorite being her false eyelashes. And the uniformed guard at the auction house had to appear holding a baggie filled with Joan Crawford's eyelashes. So I wasn't exactly, you know, headed for NOM or covering Watergate or anything like that. I was, and I also had this terrible tendency to, make things up when a story wasn't going my way, where I didn't feel it was tying itself up. But after a few paragraphs, it would. So it was quite wise for me to get out of investigative reporting.
While you were a reporter, were you hoping to get a play staged?
Yes, that was always the real goal. I was working on many plays at home and basically teaching myself how to write, which is a continuing process. Because I've never been able to really take playwriting courses because I need real hands-on experience and I need to make my mistakes as publicly as possible. So journalism was always a way of supporting myself until I could get a play on.
Your first play, Poor Little Lambs, was optioned by Hollywood and it went through some wild transmutations. What was your story and what did the Hollywood producers eventually want to do with it?
Oh, well, it was a great Hollywood education because even though the film was never made, I wrote many, many drafts of the screenplay. And it was a romantic comedy about a men's singing group at Yale called the Whiffen Poofs, which a group which really exists. And the plot concerned a female undergraduate who wanted to become the first female Whiffen Poof. Well, once this story entered the Hollywood system, it would change as trends change. So over the years that I worked on various versions of the screenplay, it would become a gang drama when more serious films were in. Suddenly the producers would ask to have the townies of New Haven have street brawls with the snooty Yale students, something that really doesn't quite go on. Then when the Brat Pack movies became quite successful, suddenly Perhaps this was a Rob Lowe, Judd Nelson vehicle. And then as, you know, sci-fi boomed, the Whiff and Poofs might travel to other galaxies. So it was a real education in Hollywood nonsense and why I eventually dropped out of the process on that project. And luckily, the film was never made and the rights to the play have reverted to me. So I've learned to be a little more protective.
What are you working on now?
I'm actually in the middle of a new play. So it's still in the typewriter.
We can't talk about it.
No, because I'm too superstitious. Whenever I talk about something as I'm working on it, I hear myself and I think, my God, that sounds awful. Abandon ship immediately. So I'm trying to postpone that particular neurotic epiphany a little further. Although I do find what shocks people is that I do still use typewriter. I am computer illiterate. I have a big old IBM Selectric, one of those tanks, and that's my baby.
You can't drive either, right?
No. I'm living a very happy 17th century life, but I do enjoy being driven. You know, I am one of the world's great passengers.
Well, Paul Rudnick, thank you very much for talking today.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for having me on.
Paul Rudnick wrote the screenplay for the new film In and Out. It's playing in theaters across the country.